Welcome to the Drive Phase Podcast, the best podcast for information on issues surrounding sports business in the Caribbean. On the Drive Phase, we have discussions with sport administrators, coaches, athletes, and various stakeholders in the sporting industry and examine their contribution to sports and entrepreneurship. Here's your host, Dalton Myers.
Thanks as always, Colleen. This is our 21st episode, and as always, we're super happy for all the feedback so far. In this episode, I have a good friend with us. Took some tracking down because she's really busy. It's football time, of course. I will talk a little bit about that. But I'm grateful to have ESPN's Alexis Nunez. We're going to be discussing media and sports, really talking about her journey so far. Alexis is a sports journalist with ESPN, as I said before, and a huge sport fan. In fact, a Manchester United fan, which is pretty sad if you ask me. Alexis, welcome.
Oh, you just had to throw that final dig at me, and I can't even come back with it because we're terrible this season. Well, we have been terrible, but you know what? At least now you can separate the real ones from the fake ones, because I'm sure everybody jumped off of that bandwagon a long time ago.
Well, I think there are still some Man U fans around, especially because you guys beat Chelsea. Incidentally, so my producer, Roshika Grant, who you have never met, but she's a Chelsea fan. Which is even worse, actually.
I know. Well, I mean, I suppose everybody has like their banana peel, which is so funny that I'm watching a couple of times this season, because I always say that I'm so terrified every time United play Wolves, because yeah. I just feel like Wolves always present such a challenge, and I don't know what it is about them, but they're just like, you know, your little bogeyman, I suppose, or your bogey side. And that's the same thing with Chelsea. I cannot believe. I mean, one of my good friends at work here in London, he's from Chelsea, and he's a tried and true Chelsea fan, season ticket holder, goes with his mom and dad every week. And he was like, he was sending me a message before to like try and give me like some banter about it. And I was like, you know what, I can't even come back at you because I know we've beat you a couple of times already this season. And I was like, this one, you know, you might as well win because I really can't say anything right now. And I really cannot believe that United came out 2-0 winners in that match, because, I mean, Lady Luck was definitely on our side, I suppose, as we know, because certain people could have gotten red cards, and then, of course, VAR two goals. Rightfully so, though, I suppose, you know, if we're going to talk about that. But still, just after the first half, I was like, oh, Lord, here we go again. Remind me why I'm watching. But obviously, United played a bunch better in the second half, and I can't believe it to say that, you know, Chelsea were able to get the best of them again.
Yeah. Well, you support Manchester United and you also support West Indies cricket. You're a huge sport fan. Well, certainly West Indies cricket is a headache by itself. But what got you started in sport, though? Why such a love for sports?
Honestly, I probably would say my father, because at home, and I know you know my mummy as well very well.
Of course.
Well. And she knows you and loves you and always talks about you.
Yeah, she's amazing.
But mommy will definitely tell you that, you know, daddy has always been the boss at home, and daddy just has one rule, and that is basically, like, at least growing up, now not so much, but he always had that rule that when we eat dinner, we have to eat as a family, everybody around the table. So me, mommy, my older brother when he was still, you know, before he moved away, of course, and went to college, etc. And then my younger brother, Alejandro, who's still at home. And that was that we all eat as a family. And then because daddy's the boss, he controlled what was on the TV at that time. And he used to change, like, our cartoons or whatever we were watching earlier. And he'd be like, sit down and come watch something with sense. And it was always cricket or football, if there was football going on around that time. And, of course, there was... this was before the Champions League was all glitzy glam, and because of the time difference, there was always some sort of European football that, you know, we would find to watch, or golf. He's a huge golf fan. That bug never rub off on me, though, I'll tell you that much, because golf is, let me tell you, I've done golf tournaments before, and I do follow it loosely, but oh my goodness, as we know, golf is not the best spectator sport.
That is correct.
Exactly. So, especially if you're following people around for the holes, and that will never rub off on me. But my daddy loved golf. He even used to make us watch. And I know people will argue whether this is a sport or not, but WWE wrestling.
Oh, really? And a lot of the listeners will probably say it's a big sport, but I'll leave that for another time.
Yeah, I mean, there's there's an element of acting, I suppose, into it. Or not, there's a big element of acting in it. But yeah, we used to sit down and watch that as well. I mean, I remember my brother and I like staying up late, well past our bedtime on school night sometimes, and mommy would let us stay up because daddy was watching. And when it used to be Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair, and they would have the cage matches. He would let us watch that, even though now I think of it, it was probably quite violent for us. But it's all right. We turned out fine. So yeah, literally from there, and I mean, he used to take us to like Reggae Boys matches and, you know, as well cricket. And, you know, cricket, for a youngster, I mean, even these days, it's hard to sit down and force someone to watch Test cricket.
Especially,
you know.
Yeah. Or regional, exactly. Or a lot of the regional 2-day, 3-day games, 4-day games.
Thing. Exactly. And then I would watch at KCC, like Kingston Cricket Club and stuff like that. So not even international cricket, whatever was going on either at Melbourne or Sabina Park. So I just kind of took the mentality of if you can't beat them, join them. So after a while, I just started asking questions because obviously I can talk. And I was like, okay, daddy, well, while I'm going to be here for the next 6 hours, how do I know this is a LBW? How do I know this out? How do I know this and that? Or how do I know that's an offside or that kind of stuff? Simple things like that. And then eventually it just caught on. And he loves tennis as well. And we'd always sit down and watch tennis and stay up late. He loved the US Open and Australian Open. He loved Serena and Venus Williams, of course. So I also, as many of us, you know, grew up watching them. Because just of the powerhouses that they are. And, you know, everything that they've done for women in sports. So, yeah, and from there, it just kind of stuck. And then before I know whether daddy would go to bed earlier or not, I was still one up, you know, trying to watch the West Indies when they would be playing India and the time difference was late. I would be like the one waking up 3 a.m. to watch the semifinals of the Aussie Open because, like, Andy Roddick was playing and he was my favorite and he always got Leighton Hewitt in the semifinals. And I'd always wake up to watch. And mommy was just like, well, don't tell me you don't want to wake up to go to assembly. And I was like, oh, God. And the sleep I lost watching. And Rafael Nadal as well, when he'd have those epic battles with Federer. And then, yeah, it just kind of stuck. And as we say, the rest is history.
Awesome. Well, let me ask you a question, though. I mean, in all of this, what then prompted you to become a Manchester United fan? I mean, that's all I want to know on this topic. How?
I mean, honestly, it's very simple. Like I tell everybody here, because people here, of course, you know, get super territorial. And there's a lot of my co-workers here in London are English and actually support their hometown teams as you do here.
Right.
You know, and not everybody's hometown is, you know, Chelsea. I have another co-worker, Sam, and it's true because when I came here, when I just moved here, which was last year, June, my normal question was just to ask everybody who you support. And it was, I guess, funny in my ignorance to expect them to support a Premier League team. And it's kind of beautiful that they would be like, oh, well, you might not know it because like one of my co-workers supports Stevenage. I didn't even know where that was. But
okay.
I found out that Lewis Hamilton was born in Stevenage, and apparently he called it like a slum, and so they all hate him now, and blah, 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 but story for another day. But it's kind of nice to hear all of that. So all of them, because they are so, like, tried and true to their hometown teams, and there's still an element of, oh, screw the Premier League, because that's all the glitzy, glam, bandwagonist teams in there. So they all give me a lot of hell all the time for supporting Man United, and they always remind me that Manchester United supporters are never from Manchester. I know, they'll be like, oh, so where are you from? Jamaica, shocker. Let me guess, you support United, right? Yeah, exactly. They're always like that, because which is partly true, because a lot of people from Manchester tend to support Manchester City, obviously, but then they can't really say much now because they came into a bunch of money. But I just started supporting United really simple, in the sense that when I started like following football, because of mom being from El Salvador, all my family, so all my uncles, when we go to El Salvador, they would watch Real Madrid. And I felt like I was following them, and I'd always take a keen interest in Real Madrid and stuff. But I was like, oh, I don't want to jump on this bandwagon. So I was like, let me watch, you know, English football. And I started watching it, and then I found out that Dwight York obviously played for United by the time I started watching it. And I think a year after is when they won the treble. So I was like, all right, well, this seems like a good team to stick with. And I just stuck with them. And it was beautiful for how many years before, obviously, like the last five or seven.
Yeah, and I'm here kind of just hoping it stays that way.
I'm sure you would.
Listen, I mean, you're a true West Indian. And a lot of persons sometimes say, well, is she Jamaican? But you've spoken about this on a few other podcasts, interviews, etc. But you love your carnival. You love your food, you claim. And you love your cricket. And that's part of what helps to, you know, push you as a West Indian, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I always remind people, because obviously now as I've lived in the States for 4 years and then now I've moved to England and I've been here not even a year yet. But there's always that question about, oh, but you don't look Jamaican. I'm like, oh, my gosh. I see there's these memes on social media that they say funnier thing, but it's like, oh, sorry, I didn't just pull out Bob Marley from my bottom or something.
Yeah.
Would that make me look Jamaican to you? And I always remind everyone that our motto is out of many one people. And I just try to, obviously, like, it's something I'm always proud of. I always support West Indies cricket. I have them tattooed on my leg along with Man United. And everyone's like, oh, you're crazy. But I think West Indies cricket, which now in my travels I've learned, is that everyone's second team is always West Indies. Like, I've never come across anyone in all my travels that said, oh, you know, West Indies, I really don't like them, or I really don't like Chris Gayle, or I really don't like Dwayne Bravo. You know, it's always everyone kind of loves the fact that, you know, it's this whole, as much as we hate this phrase sometimes, but the Calypso cricket, and when you think of the Caribbean, you think of obviously a good time and colour and just happiness and like a celebration of the sport. Like, we bring that kind of carnival to cricket, that kind of vibe. I mean, I've been to cricket obviously here in England and it's a completely different thing. I've been to cricket in India too, and that's probably the only other one I could compare it to in terms of the atmosphere, but I still think our vibe for cricket, you know, on a good day in the Caribbean is just very special. So I try to keep that, you know, flag waving high in all my travels.
Awesome. So let me ask you, move a little bit more to journalism. So you went to the University of the West Indies, Mona Campus, Carrick to be specific. How was that experience? And at what point there did you decide, you know what, I'm going to be doing TV, or what type of journalism you're going to be doing?
I actually knew that this is what I wanted to do from high school. Because again, mommy will tell you, or like my best friends will tell you, so I went to Campion College for high school, and my best friend always used to tell me, she's like, you know, you're like made for TV in terms of your personality. And I actually, there was one point where I wanted to do film, because from when I was, I want to say like first form, second form, that's when, you know, IT finally got added to the curriculum and things got advanced. I think I just aged myself. But you know, it's that's when they started doing like cooler things. And I remember they always had Windows Movie Maker, and I used to make slideshows of just pictures, like movies of, like, I would do it for Man United, I would do it for like Andy Roddick as well, he's my favorite tennis player at that time, mm-hmm. Do it for Rafael Nadal, same thing. And I just enjoyed the whole aspect of coming up with an idea of something and like producing it, editing it, and then, you know, putting it out. So I really actually thought to study film, and that kind of thing. And then obviously, yeah. In Jamaica, I mean, I know there's that influx that everyone, of course, thinks that, you know, you have to go outside of Jamaica to get a proper education to make it, which is not true. I mean, I had a great time at UWE and I wouldn't have changed it for anything. I enjoyed going there and I was able to, you know, work on all those skills. And when I got there, I know the second year when you obviously specialize in what you do at Carrick, because the first year is kind of just like media laws and a general introduction into media and communication.
Uh-huh.
And then second year, you obviously specialize in what you want, so radio, print, TV, etc. And the first semester, I believe we learned more of the presenting aspect, which is, you know, like how to write a story, how it differs from what you write for paper and print. To how you write it for television and radio broadcast, which is obviously more simpler, more conversational, that kind of thing. And then after, you got into the actual technical side of it, like the video production. And I honestly enjoyed, always did literature as well. I did literature straight up in my CXCs and for CAPE as well. I did Spanish literature tattoo at UE as a minor because mommy said it would look good, even though, yes, I know I'm good in Spanish. So everyone's like, oh, that's cheating. Blame mommy. She told me it would look good, so she's a boss. I just did what she told me to do. And so I've always loved writing as well and literature and whatnot, so I did that too. But then there was a video production aspect that I really also fell in love with. And I think when I didn't realize that I was so comfortable in front of the camera until I did those bits. Mm-hmm. And I could see definitely the rest of the class, even though there were moments where we'd have to all go up, write a story, like we'd get a story that was on in the newspaper and we'd have to simplify it and write it as if we were doing it for a news broadcast on TV and go up in front of the class and read it. And you could see the ones that were like, yeah, this is not for them. And then I just was always like, everyone's like, you're just always a bubbly, like, vivacious person at the front of the class. Like, you don't get nervous. And I was like, no, not really. I mean, you get nervous, but I feel like once it's just go, you just go and you just did it. So that's when I definitely started to consider reporting more so.
Okay.
I think than the actual video production of it. So but it was always something I wanted to do.
Okay. You spoke about your mother. Listen, just for the record, she's an amazing woman. I really enjoyed working with her all the time. And that bubbly personality you talk about in you, I get that from her also. I mean, she's just amazing.
Oh, yeah. Mommy's a superstar. I always tell people that. She tells me how she always tells people, oh, it's my daughter. Look at her. She's at ESPN, blah, blah, blah. And I always tell my friends that when I go, like, to UE, and people go, oh, you're Senora Nunes' daughter? Oh, my gosh, your mother. And I'm like, Mommy, you're the real celebrity. Like, people used to give me, like, discounts at, you know, at a cafe just because I'm her daughter. So I was like, queer. Even now, when I still go, I can't tell you how many students of hers have messaged me, and they don't even go, oh, you're Alexis Nunes, you're on ESPN. I've watched that with my brother, like, they go, oh, you're Miss Nunes' daughter.
Yeah, no, like, no,
yep,
she's
that's me.
She's amazing. So after UE, I think it is you went to Sportsmax. I know certainly my next encounter with you, you were at Sportsmax there. What were some of the highs and probably even some of the lows for you there?
Yeah, honestly, Sportsmax was, I mean, I wouldn't be where I am today without Sportsmax for sure, because that was my first introduction and I realized how lucky I was to get a job, I suppose, in the exact field that I wanted to work in straight out of university. I mean, there were like a couple of months that passed and I did like, for Carnival season, I did PR for Bacchanal Jamaica, which was great too because, duh, I love Carnival. And it basically involved writing almost like a press release after Bacchanal Fridays, back in the good old days at Mass Camp, doing the press release and then taking like the pictures and stuff from the night before, and then artist like management as well, which was still kind of fun because I know I'm like mommy, I'm a sociable person, so it was kind of great. And then I got like free entry to Bacchanal Friday every Friday, and then that's the one time mommy couldn't tell me I couldn't go because I was like, mommy, it's work.
You see, you're working, right?
I'll be like, mommy, it's work, and she couldn't cuss and tell me, oh, you're coming home too late. I'll be like, well, this time I genuinely had to be the last one to leave. So I did that quickly, and that was quite fun as well. And then I remember they were having the audition at Sportsmax because I don't even remember how I got contacted for it, to be fair, but anyways, I did. And they basically were coming up with a Sportsmax zone because Sportsmax then basically just had, they didn't have any much original content, like in terms of a flagship show, etc. It was mainly like, right, so obviously the basketball or the football, etc. So they were coming up with a Sportsmax zone, and I went and I did the audition, and I had to read a volleyball story, which was funny because it was about a match that I covered, because with mommy, I did certain things that, of course, the Latin American and Caribbean Center at UE used to do, and they hosted a bunch of, I don't know if you even remember this, but they hosted some like players from Mexico that came over, and they were volleyball players, and they were playing Jamaica in a match. It was one of the Norseca matches.
Yes, like one of the Norseca matches, yes.
So I kind of helped to be the liaison officer with them because naturally they couldn't speak English. So we'd help take them around, something again that mommy put me on. So It was like a match report for one of their matches that I was actually at. So I was like, oh my goodness, this is perfect. And I did it. And then they called me back, I think like the day after, and they said, you were the only person that could say Norseca. Everyone was like, N-O-R-C. Yeah. Like reading it out. They didn't even know. I was like, oh, funny, I've done stuff in volleyball. And they're like, cool, well, the job's yours if you want it. And yeah, and then that was it. The rest is history. And SportsMax, I mean, was absolutely amazing in the sense that right off the bat, I got to work with, you know, Wavell Hines, Waves, who's still a good friend of mine. And I knew him as being a West Indies cricketer, which was amazing. And now he sat right beside me, you know, at the desk. It was fabulous. And then Jeff Dujon as well, who we even need to go into his accolades. I mean, Peter Jeffrey Dujon.
Legend
who again is
of the
still
games.
A good friend of mine. And then, of course, Lance, who is a veteran. And then when Lance, you know, wanted to come off the camera, and then clearly Joel Villafana also was part of it. And what was so funny is that Joel, when he first came, when I did my internship, and because, again, I love Carnival and I wanted to go Trinidad, and Mommy's like, well, you can go Trinidad when you can afford to pay for your own costume. So I was like, fine, I have to find another way. So I applied for my internship at TV6 in Trinidad instead of doing it in Jamaica. So she had no choice but to send me. See, you have to outsmart the system. So I went to Trinidad and I did my internship there at TV6. And I basically would write the stories for Joel Villafana, who was the sports reporter there, the lead sports anchor. Mm-hmm. And Joel was absolutely amazing too, took me under his wing. I used to like run home too and watch the TV6 news just to see, you know, which ones of my stories made it and which ones, you know, he left the exact script on. I'd be like, those are my words. So, and then now here I was literally working with Joel like 2 years later. It was surreal. And then fast forward to Simon Crossfield coming in, and you know, Simon is my bona fide, like my artery, basically. He's like my aorta.
Yeah, you consider him a big part of you and your journey.
Oh, definitely. Simon was just that last bit of personality I needed injected in me to go out in the real world and just do this. He came in perfectly at the right time, and I was still like very, you know, green and very bubbly and happy and personality-wise. But Simon, I think, came in, and as many people would say, he's cantankerous and miserable. But
yeah, no, well,
within
he is,
reason,
isn't he?
And he always, like, I always say you can find good, and he, not that he was my boss, but people, I suppose, can relate to having good bosses and bad bosses. You have bad bosses that just criticize you almost personally. But with him, it was always like a no but. Or here's a nice different way of writing it. Or, and even certain times, because I know that my style is very, I would say like almost more Americanized now that I look at it. Because I still feel like in the Caribbean, sometimes we stick with the BBC style, which is very like button up, you know, blah, blah, blah kind of thing. Almost wear the pantsuit and just read.
Yeah, more conservative, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And that is definitely not me. And I think American television is just all personality driven.
Yes.
You know, like they almost won't even look at your CV. They just put you in front of a camera, do this in your personality. And it's either one of those moments where it's like you have it or you don't. And I think Simon was always someone that encouraged me to keep that. He was like, don't lose it. Don't, you know, if somebody tells you, oh, probably don't use your hands so much when you present. He was like, you know, don't listen to them. He's like, that is you, and that is what makes you stand out. So he's like, just put on your crown, be a queen, be a diva if you have to. And he's like, just don't lose that side of you, because he also realized that he became Simon Crossgill, obviously because he's intelligent and capable for doing his job, but because he has that personality, and that's what made him stand out. So I think he was definitely a huge part in me, I guess, truly like owning my skill and finding out who I was and who I wanted to be, I suppose, in this industry.
Yeah, and well, I wanted to ask you, since you were talking about Simon Crossgill and kind of moving from Simon, you then have to work with people like Craig Burley. These are different personalities, aren't they?
Yeah. And it's so funny because I love Craig and I get along with Craig, and I know he's another cantankerous one as well. And
He is.
he's there, but Craig knows his role, and he just absolutely executes it to a T. He's definitely, but I mean, how he is on camera, he's definitely like that off camera. Like, he's not putting it on. He will still tell you straight up how it is, but he's amazing to banter. He's hilarious. I like laugh. I always would look forward to doing shows with Craig. Always. At least you know where you stand with him.
Yes, yes. Well, the same thing with Simon, actually. I think Simon is just going to tell you, you know, how you think. He's not going to hide it to this day. And this is Simon Crosskillen. He's on local radio here in Jamaica. That's him, whatever you get.
Yeah, I know. I think it's so funny because, I mean, I think Simon might, like, hate me for making this comparison. But it's so true that I always say that he prepped me because there's been moments where we'd see the rundown before the show. This is on the Sports Night Zone. And if there was something on it that Simon was like, we really don't need to talk about that because he's like, there's nothing. It's like a dead story kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then sometimes they would leave it in there just because the producers are the producers. And fair play to the producers. You know, producers build a show.
Right.
And they can ultimately make the decision if you want to talk about something or not. And I guess the anchors then have to follow to a certain extent. And then Simon would just see, like, pop up on the prompt, or he'd see the graphics come up, and he would just go dead silent. He'd be like, oh, okay. Yeah. He'd be like, no. And he would just be like, I know I have nothing to say on this.
Yeah.
And then it would just fall on, like, me, or it would fall on, like, just Wavell as well as myself, and we'd have to try come up with something. And we'd be like, so Simon, because at the time he was the lead anchor.
Right.
So we were like, okay, and just kind of take over the segment. And Craig is the same way. Craig is strong with his opinions, and certain things he doesn't want to talk about because, fair play, he can't watch every single football league in the world. And if he feels it's not his strength, he won't really say things here and there. And then it just has to be me and Shaka to talk about it, or me and Stevie alone.
Yeah.
And Craig just sits there at the end of the table.
So tell me now, how has that experience been? You've been at ESPN for a while now, both in the States and over there in London. How has it been going?
It was great, actually. I mean, so far it's just been, I honestly can't believe it's already been 5 years at ESPN. I should be getting a little plaque soon, hopefully. We do, because, you know, the ESPN is owned by Disney, and it's right. Amazing because once you get through 1 year and then 5 years, 10 years, they send you like little Disney, a little Mickey Mouse or Goofy kind of ornament, like a little medal, like congrats on your 5 years. So
we'll take a picture and post it on Instagram when you get yours.
Oh, for sure. I think you'll be sent to my, I think it gets sent directly to your boss, and your boss makes the presentation, but my boss is in the States, so I have to kind of chase him up on that. But because I want it. It's so cute. But yeah, I can't believe it's honestly been this long. I live in London now because I am working out of the ESPN UK office, which is in the Disney office here in London.
Okay.
And I've always wanted to live in London, or just in England, to be fair, because I've always viewed it as kind of a bit of like the epicenter of the two sports that naturally I cover the most, which is, you know, cricket and football. And I mean, of course, England, I suppose, you know, invented the two sports and gave it to the rest of the world. And so it's somewhere I've always wanted to live, you know, and just be close to it. But living, I went to Bristol, Connecticut first, which is where the ESPN headquarters are. And that was an amazing experience. It was my first time being away from home. So I kind of just took it. I was just so open-minded, and I just took it with open arms, honestly, like with no prejudices or anything, apart from the cold, because I went from never seeing a flake of snow in my life to it would snow like 3 feet on a regular blizzard. There was that Snowmageddon, literally that was the name of it, Snowmageddon, and now I've seen enough snow to last me out. So other than that, it's been honestly an amazing experience. I've gotten to do things that I only could have dreamt of, to be fair. Plus some, it's exciting because every day you wake up and you just wonder, you know, what's next? Are you going to get called out? Or, you know, are you going to just hear that? Which is funny because my dog's name is Zlatan, because Zlatan's one of my favorite players. It's not my favorite player. And literally, I had it. And I remember my producer called me. This is like within my first year at ESPN. And he just pulls me and he's like, so do you want to interview Zlatan? I thought it was a joke because he knew my dog's name was Zlatan. And then he said, no, I mean serious, like the real Zlatan. And my jaw just dropped. I was like, oh my goodness. Yeah. So it's those kind of exciting moments that you never know what you're going to get thrown into, but you just have to be ready for it and up for it. And like they say, if you love what you do, then you don't feel like it's a job, I suppose. And that way, I think it helps you just deal with the challenges that naturally come, you know, in anything, I suppose, in life.
What would you say is your most memorable football assignment and cricket assignment? Let's take football first.
Oh, my goodness. Football. I mean, I've done quite a few. I would definitely say, I mean, some that come to mind, it's hard to pinpoint one. Meeting and getting to interview Zlatan definitely was huge because, again, I was so green. This was my first year at ESPN. And Zlatan, the reason why I loved him is because of his personality. He's almost like a Simon Kroskin.
He's an enigma.
He's a character. Would have these kind of feisty, witty press conferences or interviews that, to be fair, at the end of the day, I don't think I would want to be the interviewer on the receiving end of them. But that's why I liked him. And now I just kind of, when it happened, I was like, oh gosh, I'm the interviewer. I was like, am I going to become a meme after this? What's going on? So I was worried for that, but he was absolutely brilliant. I think one of the biggest ones that will always stick out in mind is when we broke the news of when Romelu Lukaku signed for Manchester United.
Okay.
And that was huge because we had gotten it through his agent at the time, which is Mino Raiola, which was then Mino Raiola. And it was, I mean, you know, you probably know Mino. I think those in the football world know Mino.
You must.
Mino, he's also a character. And especially this week. And he basically liked something, I believe, that we had done with Pogba the year before. So he said, look, I can confirm to you that Lukaku is signing with Manchester United. If you guys can find a way to get to LA, because they were still on preseason break,
right,
before United get there, then you can just interview him on his own, because as of now, he's kind of like a free agent, because this was the day before he was to finish his
medical. So you have that small window to...
He was like, I'm telling you that the deal's in place, and unless something terrible happens, which God forbid, which shouldn't, then it's on, and you guys can obviously do the interview as if he's officially signed and then break the news before anyone else does. So, of course, I remember jumping. I was at people will laugh at me. I was at a Backstreet Boys concert, because I love Backstreet Boys, which was another dream come true to go to. And my boss literally called me, and this is mid-concert. I was in Boston. This is 11 p.m. at night, and he's like, how soon can you get on a flight? And I was like, what? I had to basically haul ass, drive back to Connecticut, which is about a two-hour drive, pack a bag quickly, and then get on that red eye that goes from the East Coast straight to the West Coast. So from, I flew out of Connecticut straight to LA. No rest whatsoever. As we landed, we went to UCLA and did some quick links as well for Man United, because that's where they had set up camp.
Mm.
And then immediately went to this Lukaku's vacation house, I suppose. They had rented like this massive one, which was amazing. And we did the interview, and that was just, it was such a surreal experience. He was absolutely sound. Honestly, he made it easy. He was one of the best people I've ever met. The day after, we did another thing with Pogba, and that's the one where I got pushed in the pool,
right,
and everyone obviously
remembers that one.
Because it went viral and all that stuff. And I think that entire week was just massive, obviously, because there was that fun element. There was the fact that we got to break the news, which is a huge, you know, get in and of itself. Not everybody gets that every day. And then the fact that they trusted me to do it was even better. So that was definitely a memorable experience.
Have you done any football managers?
Yeah, I did Jose. I mean, all the time, to be fair. I've done Jose Mourinho.
Actually, I want to drag that Jose Mourinho one. Oh, that's why.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I mean, I did Jose Mourinho the year after. That same trip, actually, which I know got overshadowed by the whole Lukaku news as well as the Pogba pool thing. We did Mauricio Pochettino right after, literally the week after. So we've done quite a few of them. And yeah, we're working on some now. Naturally, now that I'm here, we're going to do more because you're kind of closer to them. But we try not to always aim for managers unless they're huge characters, because
then you should get Klopp. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, I've done Jurgen Klopp though.
Oh, I didn't see
recently
that one.
It was only a short, quick one, because we presented him with, every year we do, our writers and journalists take a vote on the different football positions, and we call it the FC 100. So we choose the top 10 best in that position. So your best striker, you know, best left back, best centre back, goalkeeper, etc. And we all vote, and then based on the vote, they rank them 1, 2, 3, and they get actual trophies, awards done, and then we go and we present it to the players. So this year Liverpool won so many, as you can imagine, you know, because Andy Robertson won, Trent Alexander-Arnold won. Right. I mean, basically the entire Liverpool backline. Alisson got best goalkeeper, and Jurgen Klopp was voted best manager.
I didn't see that interview, but
yeah, so I got to present him with the award, and he was amazing. He's like that cool uncle. I'm about to like go do some of those Ancestry.com or 23andMe DNA tests just to see if I can find like a sliver of German DNA in me, just to claim him and be like, oh, I could be your niece. Because he's like that cool uncle that everybody wants, that you want to go to his house every weekend. Honestly, that's exactly how he is.
What about cricket moments? Do you have any, you know, memorable or favorite cricket moments?
Oh my goodness, memorable cricket moments. I mean, yeah, I have two in mind which have come recently. I think because I've done the Women's World T20 in the Caribbean, which was just two years ago, two Novembers ago, which was an unbelievable experience as well. Unfortunately, I didn't get to go to the matches because our set was separate and apart, because we had to get the scenic backdrop.
Right.
So we kind of tossed our reporter at the matches and then we'd come back. So that was, I didn't get to actually see the games live, unfortunately. But I mean, just covering that was amazing, because I think it was huge for just women's cricket and women's sport. It was the first standalone women's T20 World Cup ever, you know, before it would just run almost like an after the fact, you know, for the men's tournament. And it was such a good, bold move to finally, you know, give the women the respect that they deserved. And just to see, you know, up close and personal and be able to speak with all of them, you know, from, because we did different interviews as well, not just with the West Indies women, but, you know, with Australia, with England, with Pakistan, who had come over, and hearing their stories and just their battle that they've just had to face in their own countries to play the sport just because they literally are women. So that was, I think, really a really special experience to do. Plus, we had the entire panel that was with me. I mean, we had Darren Sammy on for one night, the opening night, because it was in St. Lucia. And, you know, he's Mr. St. Lucia. but the entire panel that I had, it was myself, it was Stacey Ann King, who won with the West Indies the last Women's World T20 before, right, before the one we had done. And then Melinda Farrell, who's one of our journalists as well. So it was an all-female, you know, panel too, which was just amazing, I think, to look to my side and see two other women here alone with me and, you know, having the trust of just everyone. And it's really the support and the encouragement from that we got. Even the feedback was just amazing, to be fair. And then I think this year, though, well, I say this year, last year when I got to do the Cricket World Cup, this is the men's 50 over World Cup. That was amazing, because then I got to as well have a whole bunch of, like, Graham Swan was one of our, you know, analysts as well. We had Murali Karthik, just some pretty big names there, like Dan Vettori. In studio too, other people that I've worked with, like Ajit Agarkar, who's amazing. But all these big names, you know, from cricket, in men's cricket, it was a surreal experience to be able to walk, you know, right with them into the studio, even though we were just outside. That was our studio, to be fair. And finally get to see, I think, all the cricket grounds. I think as every cricket fan would know, it's a surreal experience. You always dream of going to Lord's, whether you're a cricketer, you want to play there, or whether you're just a fan, you just want to go there.
Yeah, that's
and witness
a dream.
The match there. Yeah, and I mean, I got to go to Lord's that first time to watch Australia, England. It was within the tournament, in the kind of early stages. I didn't get to stay there long because then we had to go to Manchester right after, which was like about a 5-hour drive. So we had to leave in the middle of the second inning. But then to go back for the final and to see it and to be in England and see England win in the manner in which they won. And then a good friend of mine is Joffre Archer. I mean, I've known Joffre for a few years now. And I couldn't have been happier for him. It was, you know, we were like hanging out with his family and stuff too throughout the tournament.
Big history about him, West Indies and not playing for our youth team. And then when the provisional team came out, he wasn't in it, if I remember well. And then was drafted.
Yeah, so under 19s, yeah. Yeah, exactly. It was just one of those things similar to, like, you know, Chris Jordan as well. And it's, as I tell people, I mean, they could give him stick for it if you want. You know, I've seen obviously some other cricketers try to give him stick and say, or they tweeted out, well, you know, for how can you play for another country that's not your own, which still is technically part of his own because his father was born here and, you know, raised here for some part too. It's almost as if I chose to play for Jamaica or El Salvador, both of them. Yeah. I am literally a part of both of those countries. I can't imagine not being from one, you know, so it's similar with him. And then why not take that opportunity if you know you have it? And you can't wrong him for, you know, trying to just further his career. And I thought that it all worked out brilliantly. He's still a very, very proud West Indian too. He's never like tried to hide that. And it was just amazing to go through, I think, all of that and just see the progression and just to see, to be in England and see what it meant to the fans as well. Because here, now there is that huge debate, obviously, of how cricket can compete with football. Because football is like the glam. You've got Champions League, you've got all of that. How are you going to motivate kids to sit down, A, for test cricket, or even now 50-over cricket, you know?
Yeah.
And it was just crazy, like, to see how the whole country turned up to watch that. You saw, you know, parents coming with their kids and even, like, fathers with their daughters, too, and stuff like that. And it was a very surreal event to finally see that kind of love and respect, I think, for cricket. Because obviously, I know because of how things have gone for the West Indies, I've seen, I can't tell you the last time I saw Sabina Park sold out. Which, no, you know, breaks my heart every time I see a match there. And
sold out is asking for a lot, Alexis, when it comes down to Sabina.
I think the last time it was sold out was that first year of CPL.
That is correct.
That they brought the match there because I was still at Sportsmax, and then the mound was still open. Now there's no such thing, really.
Yeah.
You know, I get it. I really do, but it still breaks my heart too. I mean, we cover regionals. The region, like the domestic, our domestic competition, so our domestic 50-over competition, which is the Super 50. And I do that every year. And it is also quite heartbreaking to see even, and I understand and I tell people, obviously in Jamaica, cricket, you know, does take a backseat in comparison to football and track and field. But you go other countries too, like Barbados and, you know, Trinidad as well. And there's a bit more of a crowd, but still nowhere near even half full. And that does still break my heart to see it. But
I remember being at Sabina Park as a youngster, and I mean, it was hard to even get in. It used to be a packed place. Even for regional cricket, if there was a cricket match between, say, Jamaica and Barbados, or Jamaica and Trinidad at Sabina Park.
And Trinidad, I was going to say,
It used to be, but as you rightly said, the last time it was sold out or anywhere close to it was the first year of CPL, and I remember being a volunteer for that. Since then, it has struggled, you know, even for CPL, really struggled.
Yeah, I think that's what surprised me most this year, because I always said, if it's like this, fair enough, even like when the West Indies play, understood. But I feel like CPL will bring it back around. And then again, seeing some of the shots that I saw, I was like, wow, it does break my heart a little bit to see that. So it was nice to literally come here. And obviously, I can't compare, you know, cricket here to, say, the Caribbean too much, but it was nice to see, hear the struggles that, you know, English people have had in terms of watching cricket. And of course, they've come down on their team a lot. You know, England had to restructure their cricket, their one day cricket team completely. It was a slow and painful process, and to finally see, you know, that come and see the fans happy and see the young ones and see them genuinely excited, and instead of necessarily waking up and saying, oh, I want to be Lionel Messi or I want to be Harry Kane, they were, you know, saying, oh, I want to be Jofra Archer or, oh, I want to be Owen Morgan, and just putting that little spotlight back on cricket, I think was a very, very surreal experience for me.
You have been doing a lot of shows, Alexis. You've done a lot of interviews. You've been, you know, with several other presenters, etc. What goes into preparing for these? And how difficult do you find it? Or has it gotten better for you over time?
Yeah, it definitely gets better for you over time. I think with our show, ESPN FC, that we do, a lot of it is very conversational. So we don't use a prompter. We don't use any scripts, so to speak. Everything is literally, you meet with the producers before, you go over the topics that you want, that they want to include. And then you just kind of, which is what to me makes it easier. People are different. Some people think it's harder because then it's just you. You have to know how to say what to say and when to say it. But I think for me, it makes it easier because it's then just literally one big conversation that you have. So there's no set structure. You don't have to worry if you miss a word or something because it's all you. It's a conversation.
Isn't that a little bit more difficult in the sense that, you know, you're afraid that you may make a mistake or something and become a meme?
You know it's going to happen. Like, it happens 100 times. I mean, I'll give you an example at Sportsmax. In my first year, and I was reading a track and field story, and I even remember Lance and Wavell laughing till tears came out of their eyes, and I was, because I read my the zone updates at that time. This was before I had even, you know, gotten to start going at the desk and being like one of the main hosts.
Yeah.
And I would just come on every half hour and read like a wrap up of all the latest sports news, I suppose. And it was a Usain Bolt story, and I think my producer had put it in. So I hadn't written that one. Normally I'd write the ones that I had, but because this was a late story we were waiting, it was for one of the Diamond League races.
Okay.
And so it was still going on while our show had started. So usually they would just write it straight into the prompter and I would read it. And they wrote it in, and I wasn't too familiar with Pip. There was a typo, basically.
Right.
So instead of saying you saying pipped him at the line, I said he piped him at the line. And Lance and Wavell absolutely lost it. They lost it. And for that entire week, everyone reminded me how I said that Usain Bolt piped the man at the line. And I was like, wow, thanks. I was like, I think Pip has two P's in there. It was a last minute kind of breaking news story, so they wrote it in. And fair play, typos happen, which is what I was saying. This thing happens. And it wasn't my story, so I didn't have a chance to reread it before. It was just one of those things that they put. He was like, I put the story in, just read it. We changed that one. And I said on Caribbean wide television that you should both pipe down the line. So.
Well, imagine Wavell and Lance going at you for that one.
Yeah, that was definitely a special one. But it's like those things happen. I mean, mistakes happen. It's part of those things that make you stronger. I feel like, I forgot who it was that told me. They said the more when these things happen, the more you try to beat around the bush or like dance around it, is the more awkward it becomes. Because people who are watching are not stupid. They will do it. If you just, you know, correct yourself or almost have a chuckle about it or whatever, then that happens. At Sportsmark, we've had moments where the light has gone off, like a light would blow, a studio light would blow in the middle of the zone.
Yeah.
And so the set just went like pitch black, and we were like, okay, cool. But instead of awkwardly trying to go on, we said, all right, well, can't do a show in darkness, so we're going to take a quick break and sort this out and be back. You just have to do it like that, and eventually it just becomes easier, you know, but you have to go through it. Everyone has to go through it, I suppose, in just everything.
But as a woman in sport, and sport is male dominated, isn't it? As a woman in sport journalism, do you find that you're judged, you know, harsher than men? Do you, you know, and because of that, you try to ensure you get things more correctly than everybody else?
Oh yeah, 100%, 100%. Like any woman in sport, whether she's off the pitch or on the pitch, she would tell you that you have to work 10, 15, 20 times harder than the men. Because at the end of the day, like say my colleague will make a mistake, say like that, the pitch team and they re-piped him at the line, they would just laugh it off and be like, oh, he just made a silly mistake, laugh. But because I'm a woman, like, oh, well, she don't know about track and field. She don't know this. Somehow I can't comprehend that somebody just beat somebody crossing the finish line because I'm a woman. You know, yeah. And you get those. You know, now when you have social media and the keyboard warriors come out, and that is probably one of the easiest go-tos. You know, they're like, oh, she's only in there because she's, you know, ticking a box because she's a woman and they need a woman and that kind of stuff. So, I mean, you expect it, but now I think I've met like enough women in this industry as well, who it's a very, very good support group, you know, and now I think it's just, we're in a better place than ever. And I think now, cause we're more aware of it and we've gained the support of like our colleagues as well. I remember even, I think it was on SB, one person had written in, cause you know, after the show, they do a segment called Extra Time,
right,
where we take questions from the viewers. And somebody, I think, basically had criticized Craig for going too hard on me. United discussion or something. And, really? You know, Craig being Craig. And I thought it was absolutely brilliant what Craig said to him in response, because he said, no, I go hard on her because I know she can handle it. He's like, she's here for a reason because she's capable of handling all of this. You're making her seem like she can't handle this because she's a woman. So, and it's true. And it was, I think it was an amazing thing for him to say. So it's good. Like, it's good to have more people to, you know, think like that. That, you know, just to look at you or just to look at women as an equal. Like I tell people all the time, it's not like we're trying to say we're better than men or we can understand things better than men. No, it's just to let us play too. Same thing. We can be equal at this. So I think it's good that now you see a lot more people respecting that and you know, really supporting women in it. So I've definitely seen a change, but obviously there's still such a long way to go. The fight continues.
Yeah. Have you ever pinched yourself, you know, to say, hey, look, I'm here. You know, I'm a woman in this field, and the second part of that is, you know, have you considered that you are really a trailblazer? Certainly a woman from the Caribbean, from Jamaica, who is doing well at this level. And you know, what kind of advice would you give to other young girls who want to get into this area?
Honestly, you know, it's so funny because I really, really don't. I still think that there's so much that I'm still trying to do and accomplish. And obviously, now that I'm over here, it's like it's almost like a whole new world. It's that old thing about how, you know, you forget to look back. Like, you shouldn't forget to look back and see where you're coming from, because often you get too caught up with being focused only on where you want to go. And I think that's definitely what I do a lot. I think a couple of times, I mean, I'm terrible with looking at messages in my DMs, but I know a couple of times I've see messages from girls that have sent me DMs either on Twitter or on Instagram, basically tell me stuff about like West Indies cricket too. I even have one friend now that she's become a friend. She was studying media here in the UK, but she's from Trinidad and Tobago. And I was just blown away with her just confidence in it, her passion for West Indies cricket. I literally just thought like I was talking to me just 5-10 years ago, basically, like when I was in, you know, high school and whatnot. She still had that zest for West Indies cricket. She would still go, even if she was the only one there, she would go with her dad. And I was like, wow, this is literally me. This is mini me, but just a Trini version. And it's, that's when I sometimes do have to stop and pinch myself and be like, oh wow, there are other people out there. Definitely need to, like, you know, do something and like try help them, whether it's just imparting, you know, just words of my experience or sharing my experience, which is why I just try to as much as I can, because I know, just like that same thing about going to universities, people ask me that all the time, and I think it's like 50-50 in terms of advice, because I feel like a CV can get you somewhere, but in terms of television and whatnot, like I said, it sometimes when they just make that camera roll and you just roll with it, or you either have it or you don't, you know, and that's not to say that you can't work at it, it's just build that confidence, find out who you are, which, like I say, I credit Simon for helping me find that out, or find out who you want to be and just work at becoming that person, so that way when you are on camera, you know, you don't have to second guess, because once you do get in this industry and you see all these other people on television, just even like my co-host, my main one, the main co-host for FC, which is Dan Thomas, he's a great person too, and he's unapologetically himself, you know, unapologetically goofy and whatnot, and knows how to turn on the banter when he wants. And when I just got to ESPN, I was like, oh, I need to be just like him. I need to be just like him. And thank God for great bosses. Like I said, you definitely have to know which ones are there and have your back and which ones don't. And my current boss at FC, he's amazing in terms of constructive criticism. And he would always tell me, he's like, I don't want you to be Dan. We already have a Dan. He's like, I want you to be you, because you're here because we like you. And I think it's so good to surround yourself with people like that, and always just like choose who you want to disturb your peace and those who you don't, because that's the same thing. Because now, like I said, with social media, these criticisms or these, everyone's an expert all of a sudden, and everyone will throw something your way, even if they're, you know, I don't even know, just sat in their mom's basement with their cat. they sit down and they say, oh geez, I think Romelu Lukaku should lose a few pounds, and you're like, what?
Yeah.
You're telling me it's professional football, you should lose a few pounds while you're sat in your mom's basement with a cat eating a chocolate. Okay. But that's the world we live in now, you know? And I think after a while, you just definitely have to choose what you want to get to you, and what you can identify as constructive criticism that you can work on, and what is just complete a pile of you-know-what. Because it is what it is. And this is like there's no finished article, there's no like perfect article. I think it's always a work in progress. I'm still a work in progress, you know. I still question myself sometimes, and I know who to talk to, and I think that's just the important part. And you just have to never want to stop learning, and I think that definitely will help you get by.
Awesome. Let me just ask you though, I know you're doing a Formula One podcast, aren't you? But in terms of moving forward, what's next for Alexis Nunes?
Well, we have a couple of things going on. Like I said, I've not even been in England a year. And so we're in the ESPN UK office. So the UK, clearly as expected, covers a lot more stuff, which is how we ended up with this F1 podcast, which I'm no F1 expert. I'm just like a fan as well. It was something that I loosely followed. But they kind of like that in a sense, because I would have like little chats with our F1 experts, actually, in with Nate and Lawrence in our ESPN UK office, and I would just ask them about stuff like about Lewis Hamilton and a couple other guys too. And then eventually they were like, okay, let's do little hits. So when I came last year, we started doing little like 3 to 5 minute hits on basic topics before race weekend and whatnot, until eventually we said, let's just start a podcast. And we did two versions, one with me and then one without me. And somehow they magically liked the one with me instead. And I thought it was a joke. I was like, what? Are you serious? So that's how we started that one, which again, it's like never stop learning. I was like, okay, shoot, let's do it, you know? Why not? And I've got to go to the McLaren launch as well, which is good. And we have a couple other F1 things that we'll get to go to. There's a British Grand Prix that obviously comes up, so that's closest to me. But that is also in summer, and summer is usually a very packed time because West Indies are coming to tour England, so I'll definitely be doing stuff there. And the Euros are this summer, and ESPN are right told us for that. So I'll be definitely packed doing that too. So there's a lot going on, but it's cool. You know me, I'll find here and there. I'll find some time to take a nap.
Amazing. Alexis, I really appreciate this. We had to rework some things to make this happen. So I'm really happy that you took the time out to be on the pod.
No, thank you for having me. I always do like these things. It's one of those moments, like you said, you should stop at Kenny Pintos and realize that there are people out there watching. It'd be great to have more people want to do this, you know, from the Caribbean, on a global level, not just say thinking of only Caribbean companies, because there's definitely a place for it.
Thank you very much. And all the best. I can't say all the best for Manu. You know where I'm on that. But certainly for West Indies cricket and all the other projects that you're working on, Alexis, keep being you.
Thank you very much. We'll catch up another time.
All right, great. That's Alexis Nunes. Guys, remember, you can follow Alexis on Twitter. And she's Alexis E. Nunes. And also she's on Instagram. And also on Facebook. So on behalf of our producer, Rashika Grant, and always Andre Sawyers, who is the studio engineer, Marsha Boyce, who assists, and all the other persons, Rochelle Masters, Heather Bernard. Thanks for joining us on this episode of The Drive Phase. Enjoyed that episode with Alexis Nunes. Check us out on our website. It is thedrivephase.com. Make sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and on Stitcher. We had some issues with Stitcher, but that is sorted out. And make sure that you never miss an episode. Remember, as always, we appreciate ratings on any of the podcasts that you use, any of the directories, that is. And remember to go tell a friend about the show so they too can spread the word. Feel free to send feedback. We always appreciate those feedback and comments, questions, etc. Send them to thedrivephase@gmail.com or look us up on Twitter and Facebook. We're there. Use the hashtag TDP. Until next time, see you then.